for the, it's a holiday, but for us it's a work day. And also thank you very much the director of OEDB and from the governor's office and other members that came here this morning to present and to testify. I hereby open the meeting of the House Committee on Trade and Economic Development. And today is Monday, January 17, and we are going to have an informational meeting, presentations from the Governor's Office and the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department. Marty Branty is the Director of the Oregon Economic and the Community Development Department, what we call OECDD in acronym, and also the Marty Lynn Sethoff, that is from the Governor's General Counsel, and also his business policy and also the Economic Development Advisor. I'd like to welcome Ms. Sethoff and Mr. Branty, and welcome. Who would like to start first? Okay? Welcome again.
Is the mic on? Can you hear me?
Okay. We can't hear you.
You can't hear me. Let's see.
I think it's fine. I think if you just speak up, you'll be okay.
Okay.
You need to point that at you, and it'll be good.
Well, I used to teach, so I think I can suggest, okay?
Now you can point it to you.
Okay.
Yeah, that's good.
Chairman, Vice Chair Merkley, members of the committee, for the record, I am Marty Lynn Sethoff, Governor Kulongoski's Business and Economic Development Policy Advisor, as well as his General Counsel. Thank you for the opportunity to appear before this committee to provide you with a brief overview of the Governor's Economic Development Vision. Government plays a significant role in Oregon's economy. While it is an important employer in that economy, government also plays a significant role in its development. By economic development, I mean the creation of wealth and the increase of productivity and jobs. With that in mind, the policy question raised is what role should the state play in facilitating the creation of wealth and in increasing productivity and jobs in Oregon? The governor's answer to that question and his vision begins with the premise that Oregon needs to facilitate a positive business climate that can successfully compete in the global markets, while at the same time strategically investing in our economy to create and retain sustainable businesses and family wage jobs. If we accomplish that mission, businesses and industry will create wealth, and both productivity and jobs will increase. To achieve his vision, the governor's direction has and continues to focus on three primary tools by which we take action. First, investing in the state's infrastructure. The state can expend and leverage our resources to make sure Oregon's markets are open and accessible. This includes investments in transportation to allow businesses to decrease time to market for their goods. It also means investing in other types of facilities, such as those needed to train and retrain workers in our post-secondary education system. And it means investing in facilities, such as water, sewer, and technology infrastructure that are needed in our local communities to retain, attract, and expand businesses in those communities. Second, investing in the state's human capital. We live in a global economy. That's a fact that none of us can or would want to change. But to make Oregon globally competitive, the governor believes we must make strategic investments in building Oregon's capacity to innovate. To truly become known as the innovation state, Oregon must strategically use our resources to recruit, expand, and retain businesses that will create sustainable new jobs, through innovation of new products. It also means we must use our resources to attract and leverage private startup capital, as well as federal dollars, to Oregon's economy and businesses. Perhaps most importantly, it means we must use our resources to invest in educating and training our citizens to create the next generation labor force sought after in the global markets. Investing in our human capital is about investing in education, but it is also about investing in the ideas created in our universities and by our citizens and partnering with private industry to bring those ideas to market. Finally, reducing barriers to Oregon's businesses and economic growth. Government is about balancing a myriad of interests in order to govern for the public good. Often our primary tool for action is by regulating those interests. So one of the most important roles we can play to facilitate Oregon's economic growth is to seek the right balance between the benefits and sometimes costs of government regulation and the costs of unfettered growth. That is why the governor has and continues to stress that the state must use its resources to reduce barriers to business and growth when the cost of those barriers far exceed the benefits. To summarize this testimony and Governor Kulongoski's vision for you, Oregon government can facilitate and drive economic growth. That is, Oregon can drive the creation of wealth and the increase of productivity and jobs through investment of the state's resources and balanced reduction of regulatory barriers. To do so, the state must strategically invest in our infrastructure, our human capital, as well as reducing those regulatory barriers. That is the governor's vision and his direction to Oregon Economic and Community Development Department, as well as all other agencies that assist us in growing Oregon's economy. I thank you again for allowing me to provide you with this testimony and share the governor's vision, and I leave the remaining time to Marty Brantley, the director of Oregon Economic and Community Development Department, to share with you how they're executing on that vision.
Thank you.
Any questions?
Before we move to the director, Marty Brantley, if not... Okay. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you very much for having me here today. For the record, my name is Marty Brantley, and I'm chairman of the Economic and Community Development Department. I appreciate the opportunity to appear before the committee this morning and to provide you with an overview of the department as we begin our 05 legislative session. Now, as you've heard from a high-level policy and strategy from Marty Lynn, so I propose this morning that we address the following with you this morning: to provide information about the department's mission, identify for you the strategic objectives we will pursue this year, to outline the department's structure, to outline for you some of the key projects we're working on, and to touch other areas of potential interest that could help the department to be more efficient and more effective. Now, I'd like to begin by first acknowledging my pride in the strong team that we have constructed at the department. Our staff, I believe, is really top-notch. It has come at some times with some dislocations, but I think that we have assembled a very, very good staff. We've just completed a customer survey and received a draft report, and the results will show that strong support and appreciation by our customers of the work of our people do, despite a reduction of staff of about a third of the number of people that we had previously. And when that final report is complete, sometimes during the next few weeks, obviously I'd be happy to share it with all of you. If there are a couple of takeaways I'd like to propose to you today, it would be one is how, among other than the fact that we're how proud of the staff we are, it would be that how competitive the states are in attractive and expanding businesses today. This is a highly, highly competitive business. And in fact, I have before me that I received not too long ago, it's a very nice briefcase sent to me from the ODEC people and Joanne Austin from Bismarck. And the lieutenant governor from North Dakota flew in and invited about 125 business leaders, including ADEC, to either relocate or expand in North Dakota. And inside here, you'll find all kinds of incentives for them to do so. Now, this is not unusual at all. It is a highly, highly competitive business. And so, again, I think that overview and that indication is important in a lot of the things that we do. Number two, I should say, by the way, that I was in the television business for about 35 years, and I want to tell you that this business is as competitive as a television business is. So, again, it is a very, very intense business.
And number two, my takeaway would be that everybody needs a sales and marketing arm, particularly the business sector. And we are that for you. We are the sales and marketing arm for the state. We're out there all the time promoting the state and try to close deals from people that are coming in from outside the state as well as wanting to expand inside the state. And that's about 70% or 80% of our effort. So right now, the economic status of where we all are acutely aware that Oregon has suffered high unemployment, slow business growth, and generally weakened economy for the last 3 years. A variety of factors contributed to this recession: a downturn of the high-tech and manufacturing sectors, and I've attached a graph that analyzes the gross state product by industry in Oregon and nationally and how those industries have changed over a decade. And you can see how reliant Oregon is on becoming on the fortunes of manufacturing in particular. That is on the last page of your handout there, and it looks something like this. And I pulled this for the Federal Reserve because they were saying what is unique about Oregon and why Oregon is different than some other states. And there are three bar graphs on this, as you can kind of tell. One of them is for a shaded bar graph for Oregon and its industries in 1990. The white bar graph is the Oregon industry's growth or not growth in 2001, and the dark bar graph is for the United States as a whole. And you can kind of see which industries have grown and which ones have shrunk a little bit, and you can see how we compare to the national average. But I think that the overriding thing, if you look at the fourth sector from the left, and that would be the manufacturing sector, clearly that one jumps out at you and shows you how dependent we are on the manufacturing sector and, in fact, how it has grown over the last 10 years, too. And I would suggest to you that that is one of the things that makes Oregon's economy unique, is our reliance upon the manufacturing sector, because I believe there's only one other state that even comes close to that reliance as a percent of our gross state product, and that's Indiana. So, again, just for informational purposes, as we discuss where the economy is and why it is, I think one needs to understand that manufacturing sector is so important. In addition, the effects of the national recession and major impacts from global competition obviously are affecting the recession. But despite our economic problems, Oregon has a number of historic strengths. We have a highly qualified and well-trained workforce, a well-established, although strongly challenged, manufacturing sector. We have competitive water and competitive energy rates. We have a quality of life that is routinely cited as one of the best in the United States, and many companies come or at least stay because of that quality of life. And finally, we're strategically placed on the Pacific Rim between Washington and California and Asia and Europe, and so we can take advantage of that particular positioning. In the past decade, we've also experienced strong capital investment, especially in the technology center and especially in the 1990s. While we obviously have a lot of work to do, and while we know that some areas of the state need special focused help, it's important to know that Oregon's economy is improving. Just last week, information from the Oregon Employment Department showed that Oregon added over 34,000 jobs in 2004. This is the highest year-over-year growth rate since 1999, and ended a three-year decline in employment, and so we've kind of turned that corner. The unemployment rate has dropped at the beginning of the year from 7.2 to about 6.8, about 0.5%. And by the way, that is also happening at the same time as since 2000, we've added about 150,000 new people to the state. So a very unusual occurrence is happening. Usually when you have a high unemployment rate, people leave the state. That's not happening now. People are coming into the state even though we have a high unemployment rate. Very unusual, and I think it speaks to the strengths of the state itself. And recently, Oregon is showing up as a job growth rate, and that's one of the things that we're being able to do, is absorb to some degree these new people coming in. Our growth rate is around 2.2%, and that'll likely put us in one of the top 10 states for the year in terms of job growth. Now, recently, Oregon has been making the other top 10 lists of states in our favorable business climate. Last month, the Corporation for Enterprise Development, a nonprofit in Washington, D.C., research group put Oregon in its seventh best states in the nation for economic development. and named us as the 10th best state for nurturing new companies. The Tax Foundation rated Oregon 10th best state for our business-friendly tax structure. Our workmen's compensation rates are the 10th most affordable in the nation, and we have a number of other strengths. And while we're cautious right now about the vigor of these ratings taken together, they indicate, I think, that we have taken some steps to get back on a right track for our recovery. And coupled with the real-world results we're seeing in terms of job growth and a shrinking unemployment, and the recruiting of Amy's Kitchen, which could reach 200 jobs or more, Lowe's Distribution Center, a potential to create somewhere between 500 and 1,000 new jobs in the Lebanon area, Royal Caribbean, a possibility of 600 new jobs in Springfield, and Knowledge Learning Center's KinderCare, retaining 300 jobs in Portland, and many more companies to Oregon this year, I can confidently say that we're building a solid foundation for a prosperous Oregon. And I should add also that these announcements are just in the last 4 months. Our pipeline also is probably as vigorous and as strong as it's been in many, many years. So, the direction for the 2003 Legislative Assembly as we started to go through this was, as the recession continued and deepened in the 01-02 area, we needed to develop a statewide economic development strategy, and that emerged during that time. Over the last 2 years, a very strong partnership grew in the legislative and the executive and in the private sector statewide that is targeted to creating new jobs and retaining the ones that we have to keep our economy most vigorous and vital. And these included the Oregon Leadership Summits in 2002 and 2003, the development and implementation of that business plan that oftentimes came from that convention, the drafting of House Bill 2011 in the 03 legislative session, and executive orders issued by Governor Kulongowski addressing industrial lands, regulatory streamlining, and sustainability. And so we feel that we've reached out to a number of different sectors, the private sector, the executive branch, and the legislative branch, in order to cohesively put some kind of a plan together starting in 03. What have we done to do that in terms of implementation? Well, I'd like to highlight some of the key elements of that strategy right now. Some of the goals have been to retain existing jobs and businesses, to recruit new businesses that align with Oregon's existing and emerging economic strengths, to promote collaboration with businesses and higher education to commercialize research, and to encourage entrepreneurship, to develop and implement global competitiveness and market development strategies, to meet the needs of urban and rural communities, to certify industrial lands for immediate development, and to provide necessary infrastructure to promote our economic development. In addition, we're trying to improve the state's business climate, such as the regulatory streamlining, and provide superior customer service. Now, to fully accomplish the above goals, the work of the department has focused on the following five areas, and these are not exclusive, but I thought I would just try to highlight some of these. I've classified these into three of them in terms of immediate goals. Our strategic reserve fund. In the 03-05 legislative session, we had approximately $10 million for the biennium for strategic reserve. These are funds that we use to incentivize companies that are already here to grow in new jobs, or for companies that are outside our area to come here. So far, out of that $10 million, we've invested about $4 million. We have benchmarked, if you will, deals in the works of about another 5.5. So pretty much we've expended most of the money that we have available there. Of the money that we've actually spent, of the $4 million, we can actually track to the companies and the jobs that are created. And using a very, very conservative estimate, if you will, of about 0.045% of personal income tax back to the state, you will find, using, by the way, a $30,000 job as an average, we'll find about $4.9 million just in personal income tax per year is coming back to the state off of that expenditure of $4 million. And that doesn't include any property taxes. That doesn't include any corporate taxes. That doesn't include any multipliers. We tried to be pretty conservative in showing what we've done. If those bookmarks come in, that other $5.5 million, and we actually expend approximately $9.5 million, using those same standards on a conservative basis, it'll be $19 million in personal income tax per year that'll come back to the state just on the expenditure of the Strategic Reserve Fund. So I think the discipline that we tried to use there is valid, and I think that it is returning to the state and to the economic health a very vital thing. Now, second of all, I want to chat a little bit about our industrial lands policy. Again, this is an immediate needs policy because, as many of you have told us and many other people on the executive branch, that the lack of large-scale industrial lands was a real problem 2 years ago. And so we embarked upon that as an encouragement. In fact, 2011 told us that we must do this, and the governor's executive order told us that we should do that too. And in fact, we really should, because a number of companies that I talked to said that they wanted to come to Oregon at some particular point. And they knocked on our door. And guess what? We said, yes, we'll have some land available for you in 2 years or 3 years or 4 years. And clearly companies are not going to wait that long. So we have to prepare the land available, and so when they come in, we can say, yes, we've done environmental studies, and yes, here's your transportation system, and yes, here's your utility structure. Now, we're not doing it in terms of final preparation. This can turn around within approximately a six-month period of time, but it's not 2 years, and that's close enough for most businesses right now. We have embarked upon this, and I think by June of this year, we will have somewhere between 35 and 45 large industrial sites readily identified. I think it's important to say also that we are not just racing out willy-nilly and saying that's a site and that's a site. We're using both statewide people.
Bradley, before you go on, could you tell us where those 22 certified site are, and where there will be another 35 to 45 in the future.
Right, and I'll tell you the process of that too, if I could. I don't know if I have all of those sites right here, Mr. Chairman. But during that process, again, I thought it was extremely important for not us to decide where those sites were. I really felt that the market really should tell us what are the most commercially viable sites. And so we asked, I feel, some of the best industrial developers in the state to form a panel. And there were approximately 10 people from around the state who are very knowledgeable on industrial land, and originally there were 56 sites that were suggested. Those 56 sites were then passed along, if you will, to these industrial developers, and they tried to identify the most commercially viable sites of these 56. And again, we're trying to let the market dictate that. After that process, then, we started our process, and then we hired an outside consultant, Wadley Donovan. And they came in from, I believe they're headquartered outside of New York, and they came in to verify the fact that these, in fact, have commercial value. And as we went through that process, a very cumbersome process, as both the local communities found out, as well as ourselves, there are 40 different criteria that we tried to use in order to make that land available. For example, is there a willing seller? Is it inside an urban growth boundary? What are the energy requirements, telecommunication? Is there local government support? Is there local zoning ordinances? Is there a water supply, wastewater and sewage, demographics and workforce? All these things are important to a prospective new person. And so that's the process that we went through. And as these sites are certified now, they go up on a website. And that website is probably one of the better websites in the United States today. There's probably only three states, New York, Pennsylvania, and ourselves. And we're told that we have the best website. If you go to any one of these pieces of land, the website will come up, and it'll basically tell you all the information on that particular site, workforce, location, all those things that any industrial user might want to do as they comb through the process.
Mr. Chair, we provided you with a map that provides you with all of the current located sites and a chart that will tell you about where the sites, the proposed sites are. You'll get copies of it.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And so part of our budget presentation is the continued expansion and preparation for some of these sites. So we have the strategic reserve fund we talked about immediately to try to create jobs, the industrial lands investment, and again, we have some good examples of that. In the not-too-distant future, I hope to give to you the economic justification for every site that we currently have been developing. That probably won't come out until about March or April, but that return on investment, I think, is very important for you to see. Some of that return on investment happens rather quickly. I can tell you, I believe, that the site that we're talking about in Lebanon that is perhaps going to be sold to Lowe's, and again, it has not closed, it's going through the process, has been on the market for many, many, many years, perhaps as much as 9 or 10 years. The fact that it's certified and the fact that it's gotten ready for preparation for sale is, I believe, one of the key elements of why it is being sold so, not so quickly, but in fact why it's moved right now. Number three, in the immediate side, is regional rural development. Regional rural development started, I believe, in 1987, so it's over 15 years old. And that is money that flows down from authorization from you through our department to the regional and rural areas. It is somewhat controversial sometimes because at one point people throughout the state, including the legislative session, asked us to not do any more economic development and to focus on the community development side of things. And so for not an overstatement to say that we basically dismantled our economic development department at the direction of everybody else and developed the community development side. Many of these funds were developed on the community development side, the other half of our name, if you will, and not necessarily for job preparation. And I think that that's one of our problems as we went into the 2001-03 recession, if you will, is that we weren't preparing for the grounds for the next. And some of that money perhaps should have been spent for job preparation. The legislature in 2003, in House Bill 2011, suggested that all of this regional rural money really should be directed for job growth. And so what we've now done is gone back to that. But in my conversations with some of the legislative people, they said, that's fine, Marty, but this will pass through your department. What discipline do you have that this is going to go for job growth? Once you allocate the money is gone, and so how are you going to enforce that? What we tried to do is ask each of the regions to put together a business plan. And it hasn't been easy because sometimes the people want the flexibility of this business plan to do kind of whatever they want. So we've tried to say, no, it has to be for job creation. And again, we hope to come back to you at another time in the very near future as to the return on investment that you're getting for that regional rural money. So those are the three immediate areas that I just wanted to touch base on, and two on some longer-term investments that we're suggesting that we go forward with. One of them is euphemistically called an innovative economy. And that innovative economy is trying to say, okay, that's fine. We have a very good, solid economy right now, but the world's changing. What are we doing to facilitate that change? Well, a few years ago, some people in the high-tech sector, along with the higher education people, got together and started meeting on a regular basis to address that. There were different committees formed called ETEC and OCED and a number of others that pulled them all together. And by no means was this oriented toward higher tech. I mean, it was supposed to and will include all different sectors of the economy. Marty Lynn has been a key player of that particular aspect of things. But the suggestion that we need to now take is the next step, and that next step is a suggestion that we need to make an investment in that high-tech area that will, in fact, wash across all industries. And so what we were suggesting is a $9 million investment out of the budget that will help bring together higher education and high-tech in even a closer environment. The higher education people are doing a fine job of the research side, but the development side really has to be coming from the private sector. And the private sector is a bit fragmented. It's only appropriate, I believe, that it should come under some direction from our department and make that happen. I would suggest to you that other states are doing this and have been quite successful. And in fact, in the 03 budget, the legislature allocated about $1 million for this effort. And the results, I think, of that effort, they've spent just under $1 million, and that has been matched with 11 different grants from the federal government, approximately $20 million coming from the federal government off of that $1 million allocation from you all, and five different higher education institutions. So I think that the results right there are very striking. But one of the things that hit me not too long ago is that there was an IPO not too long ago on Google. And I noticed where Stanford University allowed two gentlemen into their doctoral program, and with a very interesting idea, and that was in fact Google. But they became quite interested, Stanford did, and in fact put an investment into Google as well as the doctoral program. And I'll tell you, I believe that the largest beneficiary of Google going public is Stanford University, reaping hundreds of millions of dollars off of that investment. I believe that that's the direction that the state has to do in investing in our intellectual capital in the future. And I'm sorry, I'm taking a long time here, and so I'll try to rush through. But finally, the branding of Oregon is an important element too. The branding side is, I believe, being accepted by the community. We're having a lot of discussions with the private sector taking a major role in the branding of the state. Again, a lot of people understand what we have, but sometimes we're not on people's radar screens, and the success that the people in the branding side have done has been, I think, outstanding. So I just wanted to let you know, just in those five areas, during the course of the next few months, we'll have enough time to kind of elaborate a little bit on some of the other tools that we make. But again, I'm very proud of this department in a very, very competitive global atmosphere that we have. I believe that the state is growing. It is needed to grow some more. We need to do some more. We're not doing everything right, but I think that we're making some pretty good progress. We've had some great successes, and particularly in the second half, as they say, our pipeline for businesses are really, really expanding right now. We have the policy guidance and the structure in place, and our partnerships, I think, are developed in the private sector as well as the public, and I think we look forward to working with you as we go through this session. I will just tell you as a last anecdote that not too long ago, a few weeks ago, the head of an economic development commission from a neighboring state visited me and said, "What are you guys doing?" And I said, "What do you mean?" And he said, "Well, you're the talk of the West Coast right now in your economic development activities, and we want to know what you're doing so we can do the same thing." That's nice. We love to hear that. And of course, I told him that I'm not going to tell him. But in any event, I think that we are making some progress. And again, with your help, we have much more to go. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much for your presentation. Any questions from the members? And Representative Riley.
Just two quick questions, if I may. You mentioned a website that had the sites on it. Do you have the name of that website?
Yes. Mr. Chairman, Representative Riley, that is OregonProspector.com. And I will tell you that the private sector, primarily one company, paid for that and spent huge amounts of time in order to make that. And I'm also told that we're getting upwards of 1,000 hits a day off of that website. So it's a pretty neat website.
A quick call to follow up, if I may.
Yes, go ahead.
You mentioned earlier your statistics were based on a $30,000 average job. Does that imply that the jobs that have been created so far are $30,000 average jobs?
No, Mr. Chairman and Representative Riley, what we tried to do is be very conservative. Some of these jobs will be in that area. Some will be more. And we actually have a breakdown for every company in every location and what the prospective job salaries will be. But just blanketly, we use the $30,000 range. And again,
where can I find that breakdown?
I have it, and I will make that available for you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And Representative Vice Chair Broom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you both of you for those excellent presentations. And I absolutely agree that the state needs and has a good sales and marketing arm. We can't compete without it. If I may, I have two questions for Mr. Brantley. The first one has to do with, you mentioned in a bullet point, regulatory streamlining in an overview. What do you have in mind? What progress are we making in the regulatory streamlining?
The governor has cited that as one of the key things that he would like to do on the regulatory streamlining is one of the things that was most important. And I might ask a little bit of Marty Lynn to kind of chime in a little bit. This is not coming from our department, but it is a high priority. And Marty Lynn, perhaps you can shed some light.
Sure. Chair Lim, Vice Chair Broom. For the record, I'm Marty Lynn Sapoff. The governor issued an executive order last session. I believe it was the first executive, the first or the second, can't remember right now, directing all the agencies to immediately start reviewing regulations within their agencies to see, with the charge of take a look and see, are there regulations and processes that we've imposed that are redundant, that are unnecessary, that are causing more red tape than we need to. In doing that, I wish I had the figures, but they are also on our webpage, the governor's webpage. I think we have at this time found well over 100 different types of processes and regulations in all of our agencies that the agencies have gone in and either revised rules, gotten rid of rules, gotten rid of processes, merged rules and processes to allow for more efficient review on the regulatory side. Corey Streisinger, the director of our DCBS, is heading that initiative for the state. She continues to do that. And I even think I'm being very conservative. I think the last time I talked to Corey, she was saying we've gone through and we have well over a couple hundred types of different processes and rules that we've just decided. It isn't that, in my presentation, I said that balance. It isn't that regulation isn't necessary. The question is how much regulation is necessary. So, for example, I'm trying to think of one off the top of my head. They've managed to merge some permitting systems across agencies, for example. So rather than a business having to go to this agency and go through their application procedures and all of those processes with that agency for a particular project, say a construction project, and then they have to go to another agency and run through another application procedure and process, there's one project that has overlapped some of those so that you do almost a one-stop shop. It's that kind of a project. There are other things involved in that, and I would tell you that if you go to the governor's webpage, there's a link to regulatory streamlining, and it will pull up the last report and show you a listing of all of the types of reductions we've been making. There are also some proposals going forward this session, again, with respect to statutes, to see whether or not we couldn't do a better job of reducing barriers to business. Business has been involved in that process. They've been the ones that have come to our task force and our committees and our meetings telling us what they have found has been a problem. I will tell you that some of our issues still are the need to somehow coordinate state and local governments. It's one thing for an executive order, of course, to go out and tell all agencies, state agencies, you need to work together and you need to reduce these barriers and merge your systems, like a one database that people can go to for applications and for submitting information. Obviously, as most of you know, we can't make that charge to the local governments. But what we're working on, and I think we've had some progress, is trying to work with local governments to say, so where are your permitting procedures and applications? Are there some of those that we could overlap on so that, again, an entity doesn't have to fill out all our forms and do all our processes and then turn around and do the same thing for you? Can we work together? That's basically the project. And the details on it, as I said, if you go to the governor's webpage, there'll be a site for regulatory streamlining and a report there.
Great. Thank you. Thank you very much. And just one small caution that since we have many new members for the first time, I wish that when you use the acronym, please state the full name of it, and you can use the acronym. That the other committees, they are penalizing $1 for each of their doing it. We are not going to do that, okay? But at least make sure when you use the acronym, pronounce the full the content of it, and then you can use it. Yes. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Point well taken.
Thank you.
I think Department of DCBS, Department of Consumer and Business Services.
Thank you. Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Brantley, two questions. The first being, can you tell me what the governor has proposed for the Strategic Reserve Fund for 0507, please?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Buckley, the proposed Strategic Reserve Fund is $10 million, same as this last biennium 0305.
Thank you very much. And a follow-up question, in terms of Oregon being the innovation state, are you familiar with the Apollo Alliance, and is our state doing anything in terms of alternative energy, the creation of new energy sources?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Buckley, perhaps Marty Lynn wants to weigh in on this also, but yes, alternative, it is a very hot industry right now, quite frankly, and we are carrying on conversations in a lot of the subgroups of alternative energy, not only wind power, but certain solar aspects. It seemed to be, for whatever reason, very attractive to the state, and they tie into some high-tech companies that we're currently talking to. So interesting dynamics going on there, quite frankly. And when we got three or four requests from companies, we kind of thought, what's going on here, you know? And so we kind of pulled it all together to try to realize why this was converging as it is. So the answer is sustainability is very important to us. We're going forward with it. And in fact, I think on an international basis, our expertise on sustainability and alternative sources of energy might be something that we want to push on the international front too.
Thank you.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Okay. Vice Chair Broom, did you have any follow-up questions?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate it. Mr. Brantley, this question has to do with the Special Public Works Project Fund, and specifically, to my understanding, there was a fund request put in from the city of Bandon for a telecommunications project. I'm wondering what the department's philosophy is with this fund when there's potentially a when the fund may compete with a private entity.
Private sector, that's right. Mr. Chairman, Vice Chairman Broom, this is thank you very much for that question. And I forget the year that Senate Bill 622 went in, but that was a telecommunication bill, as you know, that connected the state really throughout the state that allowed communication in a very effective way and probably pushed us to the forefront in terms of telecommunication. The next step, therefore, is to try to tie different communities together on the communication side of things. Some cities have tried to do that individually and have asked our help. That has engendered some of our private sector friends to say, wait a minute, we ought to be able to do that, and you're subsidizing those particular cities. There is a very aggressive debate that goes on within that circle, and in fact, having been in the television business, I know that pretty well. My overall philosophy is that we don't want to compete with the private sector. That's, you know, if the private sector can do it more economically, I think that that they should do that. There are, however, examples that that sometimes get involved in the play, and that discussion in Bandon right now is an active discussion going on. So, but again, my basic philosophy is if the private sector can do it, then we shouldn't be involved in it.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Okay. Representative Broom.
Oh.
Dunham, I'm sorry. Yes, Dunham.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to ask Marty a few questions. First, thank you for explaining that us new members know little and listen a lot. Marty, I'm impressed with the speed with which we got these sites. And I see House District 59 represented five times. And on the pending and upcoming sites, I see House District 59 represented five times. I've heard you use the word bi-region, track jobs, urban and rural, job growth. Can you show me how many of these jobs were created by county or by community? Can that be done?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dunn, I'm not quite sure I understand, so tell me if I'm going on the
wrong direction. I'm looking for a correlation between urban and rural and how many of these jobs are in the rural section, and particularly how many of them are in House District 59. I was talking with my colleague, and we're very interested in economic growth in our area so that we may raise our contribution.
I think that if I could delay the specific answer to that, because we currently have an RFP going out to looking at every one of our industrial sites, and to say, to bring back to you all exactly what the investment was and exactly what the response was in terms of jobs and what it means to that particular area or that particular site. Now, I don't know if I'm going to be able to tell you the ripple effect of what those jobs meant, you know, other than what it meant specifically for that particular community. But I do have an example of what I hope to be able to bring back to you probably in April or if not. And this is a Tualatin Industrial Park, and we did this about 14 years ago. So it's taken some time for this industrial park to develop fully. We loaned the Tualatin Industrial Park $2 million to develop 375 vacant acres valued at that time of $63 million. In year one, 250 jobs were created. In 14 years from there, 1,500 jobs are currently on that industrial park, and the property is now valued at $110 million. That's the kind of information I hope to bring back to each of you on every one of those sites. Is that what you need?
Well, let me clarify that a little bit. When you were reading your presentation, you talked about that you could track to job growth, and that you could track that job growth. I'm simply asking, where are those jobs? I think that's a fairly straightforward question. If we track the jobs, we should know where they are. And I'd just like to know if any of them are in Madras, John Day, the Dalles, Arlington, Fossil, Spray. I'd just like to look at that information.
Sure. And again, I'm sorry, I misunderstood where you're going. The answer is yes. I can give you the exact companies. I don't have them right here, but I can
give you. Would that be as quick as this last year?
Well, I don't know.
I was impressed with
well,
that.
Good. Well, I can tell you that, you know, in John Day, that the Bowstring company there has been actively involved with us. As you know, it's moved to that industrial park. It is the first tenant in the industrial park in John Day. And again, it has been done with funds from the department as well as our support, too. If I'm not mistaken, they have about...
That's exactly what I'm
looking
for.
I think they have about 20 employees right now and growing from 10, so...
Vice Chair Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Comment and a question. My comment is really a thank you to both of you whom I contacted in regard to the hospital that was shut down in my district and that we were trying to get reopened. I think, as both of you know, it had a deadline of January 20th. And in part because of the very responsive nature that of your assistance, we were able to get it open in December. And that already means about 200 jobs and may mean ultimately 500 jobs in my district. So you might want to add it to your list of major job centers there.
That's right.
That's the Physicians Hospital. Thank you very much for your assistance, and particularly, Marty, for attending the meeting. Appreciate it.
Yeah, we all thank you for that.
Thank you. And... in regards to my question, when you were talking about the innovation economy, you mentioned a $9 million project, and I didn't catch the details of what you're proposing, if that's going to be a proposal that will come to the legislature this time, or it's already a done deal, or exactly what you're hoping to accomplish, and I'd love to hear the
okay.
details of that.
I did talk about a $9 million allocation request from the governor's office. Marty Lynn Sawhoff has been very involved with a group called ONAMI. And ONAMI is an anachronism again, and I'll let Marty Lynn tell you what that is, Mr. Chairman. but that is a combination of the private sector and the public sector going forward and saying this is where we want to go. Representative Markley, thank you very much for those comments. You all should be pretty proud of him because he carried the water on that deal. So thank you.
Chair Lynn, Vice Chair Broom, Vice Chair Markley, members of the committee, for the record, Marty Van Sapoff. Why don't I take a stab at that, explaining a little better on the innovation economy work. As Director Brantley mentioned, the culmination of this that we call the innovation economy, or that the governor has coined, wanting Oregon to become the innovation state in the nation, arises out of a lot of work 10, 15 years ago, several sessions ago, ETIC, OCED, sorry for the acronyms, and I won't be able to remember those there. I'll have to apologize for that. But most recently, what has occurred is the emerging recognition that in Oregon, if Oregon is going to stay competitively, globally competitive, that we are going to have to innovate in all of our economies, all of our different industries. This is not, as Marty said, this is not about high tech. This is about recognizing that to be competitive in the global markets, all businesses have to somehow innovate. They have to bring technology to their workforce, bring technology to their product development, and make themselves competitive. In doing that, what has occurred is that the governor, as I mentioned in my presentation, has recognized that one of the tools government has is investing in its human capital. Investments in, and by that I mean you would take state resources, invest them in things such as our university research, especially if you can, through a little incentive, provide that those universities partner with industry so that the universities then take the research that they do and they do well, spin those research that research out into the collaborative organizations such as ONAMI, and the acronym there is Oregon Nanoscience and Microtechnologies Institute. In a minute I'll explain that. Work on developing that research to the point at which it could be commercialized and introduced into our markets to make us, again, globally competitive. Now, Representative Murphy, you particularly asked about the dollar allocations. And Director Brantley mentioned that in the last session, the legislature authorized $1 million to be used for what we now call ONAMI. It has evolved as an organization in the last 2 years, but it was a signature research. It was for a signature research center, and that signature research center was a facility donated by HP down in Corvallis, and it was a collaboration between several of our technology industries in Oregon, HP and FEI, and I'll be in trouble because I've forgotten a few of the others, and they'll mention it to me. And then three of our universities, Oregon State University, University of Oregon, and Portland State University, for probably the first time in the history of Oregon, managed to cooperate and sign an agreement whereby they would all put resources into the signature research facility. Now, what was not mentioned is that there was also some bonded money that went into the Signature Research Center from the last session. I apologize, I don't have the numbers off the top of my head right now. This session, the governor has worked long and hard this last 2 years with all of these entities, the private industry that's involved in this collaboration. He's worked with the federal government. Recently he met with the advisor to President Bush, Dr. Marbury, lost his name. He's the science advisor to President Bush, who, in fact, I was in that meeting, and Dr. Marbury mentioned to the governor how impressed they were with the model of ONAMI in Oregon. And that model he described as, he said, we are on the cutting edge of all of the states in Oregon in terms of creating a model where state collaborates with private industry to bring technology to market. And they said they're all watching it and encouraged us and said the more that we recognize that Oregon doesn't have the kind of funds that New York does, for example, but that he said the more that you can show you have support for that, the more dollars that we can bring to bear from the federal government. Along those lines, then The governor in his budget has requested and proposed $7 million to be invested once again in the Signature Research Center that the legislature authorized in the last session. In addition to that, he's proposed under legislation as well what is called a commercialized research fund, and that's $2 million for the commercialized research fund. The 7 and the 2, Representative Merkley, is the $9 million that the director was referring to. The commercialized research fund is also an outgrowth of collaborations between the universities and the private industry, where most everybody at this point, after a couple of years of research on this now, and that research, by the way, has included committees from the State Board of Higher Education. This proposal is a collaborative effort from the universities and private industry and economic development, where the conclusion has been that there is a gap. We have funds, not a lot, but we have funds that are funding research in the universities. And then, of course, the private industry picks up at a point at which a product is point of sale marketable. There's funds for that type of investment, capital funds. There's a gap in between. I think some people have referred to it as the valley of death. Some people refer to it as just what we're calling it. We need a stopgap of funding to help us get research from the labs into the commercial markets. So the $2 million is a proposed fund. We all know that $2 million will not be enough to get that research into a commercialized mode. But what we've been told is that with $2 million, we'll probably be able to leverage other dollars. So that the concept really is seed it with $2 million, leverage some private dollars, leverage some other dollars, and help us get some of our research out of the labs into the markets. That's the $9 million total.
Thank you very much.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have 63 questions. Just kidding. Thank you very much, Marty Lynn and Marty, for being here. First of all, I want to thank you for what I've heard today that seems positive. I have to start with a negative comment in that it's hard for me to be very optimistic when I felt we didn't do our duty in the last legislature, nor in the previous one, and that was in building jobs. And we were number one in hunger and number one in unemployment, and a third of our people face serious issues with homelessness and other negative well-being factors. I have a concern that we've not moved as quickly as we could. We've not had a WPA project. We've not had a Mount Hood or any stopgap, that was a good term that you just used, Marty Lynn, any programs to put our people to work. I mean, it's great to do research, and it's great to have future concepts, but when you're starving, it's difficult to explain to my constituents why we're not doing some immediate projects. I'll even bring into consideration our great substantial financing for ODOT. I mean, considerable money. And then when you ask ODOT how many jobs did we jumpstart, it's dismal. And there's always an excuse that, something happened to planning or engineering or the land purchase. I just want to know, are there any immediate plans to end hunger and unemployment? First question.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nelson, I think that there is no magic wand, that we are involved in both a world economy and a national economy, and it is difficult if the national economy is going in one direction for any individual state to swim upstream against that, quite frankly. That being said, I think that one tries to recognize what are the strengths of any particular state. None of us were very happy when we led the United States in unemployment. None of us are very happy when we leave the states in poverty. you know, we all live here, we all have friends that are in that situation, and that's not a very proud thing that Oregonians anywhere want to be a part of. Are there magic bullets? Are there magic wands that we can do? Perhaps you know that answer better than I, but you were faced with five special sessions of having to redo the budget and redo the budget and redo the budget again. So I leave that special works aspect to you all to decide that. Are there things that we can do? I think that I've tried to outline some of the things to identify our strengths, to look to see where we can go. Some of these answers are long-term answers, you know, and some of them are more immediate. On the encouraging side, again, I will cite to you the Oregonians' economic punches back in 04. I believe that that will continue in 05. And the reason for my optimism, if you will, and it's a guarded optimism because we have plenty of work to do, is because of the number of people that are currently knocking on our door. I indicated to you on our strategic reserve fund that we have benchmarked about $5.5 million. I think that many people in the department who have been around a long time haven't seen the level of activity in this state in many, many years. And the thing that encourages me from my Federal Reserve days is that the depth of the recovery seems to be more than it has in the past. The calls that we're getting, the requests, the expansions, aren't just call centers, and they're not just distribution centers. They are the kinder cares, if you will, knowledge-based, as well as distribution, and as well as call centers. And they're scattered throughout the state, which is also very encouraging to me. There are some that are in Portland, there's some that are in Lebanon, there's some that are in Klamath Falls, and hopefully we can keep getting bowstrings growing in John Day, but also on the coast and on all that. I will tell you that I have five constituencies, I believe, and I won't go through that, but one of those five constituencies is the legislature, and another one is the regional rural people. If I'm not constantly aware of the regional rural aspects of things and catering to that, well, then I'm going to get a lot of calls, and I'm going to get whacked on the side of the head. So am I cautiously optimistic? Yes. Do we have a lot more to go? Yes. Am I proud of the fact that we have been in this hole? No. But I will tell you that the Economic Development Office in Oregon in 1995 was judged the best economic development department, not in the West, not in the United States, but in the world. The world's best economic development department in 1997, and we basically took it apart.
Follow up, Mr. Chair?
May.
In light of that same question, would you both answer this question? Would you see it would be in your area of responsibility to recommend some measures such as tax credits for consumer debt, relieving the lowest tax brackets of their tax burden, or do we just skip that issue?
Martin. Chair Lim, Representative Nelson, for the record, Marty Lynn Southoff. If I understand the question correctly, you're asking me whether or not I would consider it part of my responsibilities as the governor's advisor in business and economic development to recommend, say, legislation for tax credits.
Since we don't have any jump start for jobs and people are starving and unemployed and many homeless, there are other measures that, you know, possibly we could help in this.
It could clearly
help them in the state.
It could be something I would recommend. I haven't at this point recommended anything of that nature. I'll be frank with you that, you know, the way most of I usually do my job is to do a lot of research, and people come to me like you and talk to me about these things, and if an idea then forms and it's one that I think is a good idea that could be recommended, I would certainly do that. So if you have thoughts on that and that you want to talk to me, I'm happy to do that. I would be disingenuous to tell you that I had thought along those lines at this time. I did want to, Representative Nelson, comment a minute on your last question, if you don't mind. You had asked, do we have any major job planning like WPA coming along? And I guess I would tell you that for me it's two questions. And it starts back with the beginning of my presentation, and that is, do you see the state of Oregon and its government as an employer that we need to directly create jobs, employ people, which is a role that government plays, or do you see the role of economic development in the state of Oregon as being a facilitator of the private markets and private industry? And I think a lot of what Marty's presentation today has been that we have, as a policy matter, generally, not always, but generally taken that second route and said it's private business that creates jobs, and we need to facilitate that and make that possible so those jobs are created. I don't think that means that the other route is not possible. It's generally, I see that as a policy debate, one that the legislature would be actively involved in to tell us whether or not we should be doing something along the lines of a major public works that the government actually sponsors almost as the employer. There are other ways to do that. So I just wanted to go back and address that question as well. Back to your tax credits, I do get involved. The governor's advisor on revenue generally manages, Jim Sager manages all of the tax measures that come through, but Jim and I frequently talk to each other because when a tax measure comes through or a tax credit or any kind of a proposal that way, he knows that intimately has an impact on the economy in Oregon, and so he and I cross-check. So the other person that could be discussed on that issue would be Jim Sager, and he would get me involved then.
Okay. Thank you very much. Today is more informational meeting, and as we time goes on, we'll go into the deeper, the problems what we have, how could we make our state better. So we have ample time in the future, so I want each member aware of it, and today is not the only day to go into deeper, more broader information. Any other questions from members?
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, one more question?
Several more.
Several more?
Yes, sir.
We'll try.
Thank you. Basic to the discussions we've had, could we have some understanding of our trade agreements with our partners in the future? I saw, you know, we have the brand Oregon, which is very important. But as far as our international trade agreements and those that perhaps we could be developing, I wondered if we could discuss that in the future. Also, it was my understanding, and not because I'm from that state originally, but Texas was named the most favorable business climate to, I guess that's a good term, state, and I wonder if we've compared any of their practices to ours, or perhaps we could learn from one another. And I also wonder if at some time that we could have some clear understanding of the way we do business, for example, even with government agencies as far as competitive bidding. We keep talking about public-private partnerships, and since many states are moving to competitive bidding for state services and materials, or outsourcing as they call it, I'm hoping that we might consider some of those. And finally, if I could, I found it amazing. I'm just very disappointed that I don't see either of the counties I represent on this map, since I live in an area where for 50 years we've been greatly impacted, as you know, since you visited our two major cities, Marty, and our county, by a gridlock because of the need for the Newburgh-Dundee bypass, that we're not there. But I found it amazing that the University of California would invest in acreage in my county with their PERS monies to establish vineyards when our own state is not doing likewise. So I'm just curious of, somewhere the state of California must see we have some viable programs and acreage here that's available. So I wish that we would invest in ourselves like others do who are coming in. Finally, and last, if I could, I was so proud of OHSU when they came up with two potential cures for cancer. And since it's difficult to understand our semi-private relationship with OHSU, I had told them there that I would support their growth, but I felt that when we do come up with possible cures with pharmaceutical solutions, it seems to me that that product development should stay in the state. And I'm very sad to know that in one case, for one cure, that that has gone to the country of Germany. So I'm just suggesting that in our semi-private entities within the state, that there be some loyalty to the state who got them started and is keeping them going. And I wonder if we could consider those opportunities with OHSU particularly.
Yes.
Senator Nelson, I'm assuming from these that you'll want follow-up, and I know that you follow
sure
up
hoping
on all of
so.
That. I did want to point just a couple of initial things out. In fact, a lot of the state's innovation economy work, we do use Texas as a model. Much of what we do, there are definite similarities, things we've borrowed from their models in what we're doing. On the OHSU product development, although I wasn't directly involved in the matter that you've raised, I do have some understanding of their licensing process, and not as a defense, not as anything, just to explain a little bit. Oftentimes what they do is, I'm sure you know, they license their technology so that they are really bringing a return back into the state. And what happens is that technology is then not necessarily owned, but from the looks of it looks as though they've sold the technology. People rarely sell their technology. They license it. But I will ask them if they'll get us some more information on specifically the technology you mentioned and find out what happened there, the IP.
Thank you. And Mr. Chair, if I could make
I
another
think you
statement.
Had a last question.
Oh, no.
Minute.
Remember, I had
last
60.
Statement. All right.
But I do want to praise Pat Allen and the regulatory streamlining that he is doing, and I hope that's a soon presentation to this committee. And Marty Brantley put me in contact with him, and I think it's excellent. And I thought it was amazing to learn that the 7-Eleven stores have the more than 11, 12, as a matter of fact, permitting requirements. And just to see what they've done just in that one area in the recommendation for streamlining, I thought was just outstanding. So I do want to give you credit and him credit for that.
Thank you.
From the members, if not, I got. We will try to wrap up around 10 o'clock, so just to stay with us if possible. And Mr. Brantley, could you give us a description of the department structure, how many divisions you have, so at least including all the members aware mm-hmm. what kind of structure you have and what each branch divisions are mm-hmm. doing.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, our title is Economic and Community Development, and we have been through a number of restructures, and so there is kind of a hidden kind of feeling sometimes that, oh, here we go through another restructuring. What we've tried to do with this last restructuring is just make things very simple. The Economic Community and Economic Development Department previously had been meshed together. And so we would have, for example, our field representatives, we call BDOs, Business Development Officers, in the field. And we have approximately 12 of those scattered around the state. And I think that they are very good and efficient people. But before, we had them dealing with both community affairs as well as business affairs. And so one BDO, for example, in the valley here, might be responsible for all of the business development, as well as 7 counties and 22 different communities and their needs and washes. And you just couldn't do that. They were pulled in too many directions. What we tried to do was simplify the mission and simplify the organization and say, this is what your priorities are. And for right now, it's the jobs and business climate. I have no doubt that in the future, that the community development side will come into play and say, now we've got to do a little bit more on this. Nor are we ignoring the community development side. We just, with limited resources, say this is really where we have to go. So, with that in mind, we have the community development side and a lot of different resources, many of them federal or federal matching resources, in order to develop those communities. That might be sewage, water, wastewater, CDBG grants, or other types of things like that. The other side of the department is the economic development side. And that is where we have our BDOs out in the field, as well as a core group within Salem here itself, to help push, if you will, the economic agenda forward. Underneath those two separations fall pretty much everybody else. And so just for simplification purpose, envision that as two. We're trying to align them just as close as we can, because any kind of industrial development oftentimes depends on water and wastewater and other types of things. And that comes kind of from, if we can package it right, we can take some money from the community side and orient it toward jobs and job development on that side. And that's the effort that we're trying to do right now. So as somebody shook their finger at me 2 years ago and said, no more flower pots, and I said, no, we're not going to do any more flower pots and other types of things. The things that we want to do is the business creation and job creation, not ignoring the community side, which all contributes, if you will, to our quality of life. So lastly, Mr. Chairman, I would say that when businesses want to expand or they want to grow, or Oregonians want to feel proud of their state, it's usually two things that they look at. One of them is the economic side. And when a company comes in, they want to know maybe 5 to 7 major things. They want to know the climate, they want to know the workforce, they want to know energy costs, they want to know the operational side of business, if you will. But the other side of it is they want to know the cost of housing, they want to know transportation, they want to know recreation, and what their employees are going to be able to enjoy. And that's kind of the community side. So we can't ignore either one of them. We just need to put our foot on the accelerator a little bit on the business and business development side right now.
Great.
I don't know if that is enough detail in the structure, but again, we can get back to you more on that.
Yes, I hope you can provide each members next time the chart and how the system works.
You bet.
And that might be helpful to understand. And I'd like to introduce any more questions. If not, okay. I'd like to introduce Lynn Beaton, and from the OECDD, and what area you are in charge? Just introduce you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Lynn Beaton, and I am the manager of the Central Operations Division for the department. So when I have a voice, what I'm responsible for is handling staff who deal with contracting in the office. I manage the fiscal staff, human resources folks, our regulatory advisor. So my job is really to make sure that we've got the staff in the main office and headquarters that can provide the assistance to all of our regional people to get money and services out the door.
All right. Thank you very much. And Mike Salesgiver.
Salesgiver.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Please explain. You are from my district, I know.
That's Mr. Chairman, yes. Mike Salesgiver. This is my eighth day on the job from the Portland area, but I am the manager for legislative affairs, so I'll be the primary legislative liaison for the department this session.
Okay. Yeah, thank you very much. Is Ron Fox here?
Yes, Ron.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Chairman. My name is Ron Fox, and I, as Marty mentioned, I manage the business development group within the department, and we work closely with Oregon businesses, both existing, both large and small, as well as handle the primary inbound inquiries from companies located outside of Oregon.
Okay. Thank you very much. I'm sure the members of this committee have a lot of questions, but that will come up in the future. And with that, and there will be I don't believe anyone signed up for the public testimony.
That's right.
So at this time, we're going to adjourn. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I brought the organizational chart with me that you asked for, so you'll have that before you leave.
Okay.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
And then just for the information for the members, Wednesday we will have an Oregon business plan by the Duncan Wise, and Friday we will have a director of international trade division, and next Monday we will have the from the Oregon lottery issue we are going to discuss. Thank you.